I'm just a heck of a guy. My name is Pete. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and part of a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. And again, thank the group for having me and all of you guys for attending and being a part of this deal. I just want to start off with a reading before we get going. I'm sitting home earlier in meditation, as I usually do before I do these things, because I don't have a clue what I'm going to talk about, even though it's supposed to be on step 11 or step 3 or tradition or whatever it might be. I just don't worry about that stuff until I'm here now. And in meditation, this came to me, and I've read this many times from podiums, and it's from a book I've worked with, and I work with books. I don't read them. And it says, to breathe and to know you're alive is wonderful. Because you are alive, everything is possible. Practice, continue. Don't waste a single moment. Every moment is an opportunity to breathe. Every moment is an opportunity to experience God. Through your daily life, walk in mindfulness, making peaceful, happy steps on our planet. Breathe deeply and enjoy your breathing. Be aware. Enjoy being alive. And this gentleman, Thich Nhat Hanh, he was being sent out of his country in Vietnam because they thought he was a spy and a traitor. And the Americans didn't want him because they thought he was a spy during the Vietnam War, and he was a man of peace. And some folks went to visit him one time. He has this place, Plum Village, it's called. And they watched these monks go through the day. And the gentleman who was doing the interview said, what is so special about what you do? You're up really early, you pray, and then you do chores, and then you bake bread, and you do more chores, and you meditate and pray, and then you eat, and you go to bed. And he answered it like any enlightened being would. He says, when we pray, we know we're praying, and when we eat, we know we're eating, and when we're walking, we know we're walking. And what he meant by that was the mindfulness to everything they were doing and not being attached to, is the bread going to be okay? I hope I didn't cook too much. Maybe I didn't make enough. All I have to walk all of this, and I'm going to be tired by the time I get there. And what about this and what about that? Mindful to breath. And when I studied this man, I was amazed at how his information paralleled on another level, but paralleled what our 11-step talks about when it talks about prayer and meditation. And meditation is one of the things that we don't talk about enough as a fellowship. It's prayer is talking, and prayer is and meditation is listening, and then they pass the basket and go home. And the reason why that is because not enough of us are working with the sacred silence called meditation. And when this thing first started, they meditated. And part of the meditation was to study and think about what we just learned. But then it took on another level to still the mind, to be mindful to where we are, to surrender to the moment, to practice daily acceptance. It sounds like a lot when we're first off and running, when we're first starting to enter this world of the fourth dimension, when we're entering the world of the spirit, when we're starting with prayer and meditation. But then it becomes who we be, and we can't imagine life without it. We don't have to remember to be mindful. We don't have to remember to meditate, but it's who we be now. Becomes part of our consciousness. And then we think about how we existed without it, we wonder why we needed to drink. So many folks have said, you know, you people in AA or these other people, these spiritual people, meditate to escape reality. And what we're really doing is meditating to experience the only reality that is. And that's this moment with God. So someone walking into Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time, perhaps has been here a while, will say, what does this have to do with drinking? It has everything to do with drinking. And by the time we get to the 11th step, should we still be talking about drinking? The problem is when we don't work with the disciplines of 10 and 11, we will be talking about drinking as individuals because we just came back again if we're lucky. And the growing and understanding and effectiveness is vital. And it shouldn't be one of the 10,000 things I do, but the only thing that is necessary that I have to do that day, besides eating and drinking water, is prayer and meditation. It's the substance of how I operate. It's the soul food in which is vital to me and to any drunk, actually anyone out there. Because then I become a prey to misery and depression, and circumstances and external conditions own me, even though I say they don't, and I give a great talk on how I'm spiritual. Because I'm sober 30 or 40 years or 20 years or, you know, 90 days, and I've seen the Lord. You know, and I want to tell everyone about it, but catch me in a parking lot when I can't get out. Catch me in Publix when the line is long, or when she doesn't cook dinner for me. Then we'll see how spiritual we really are, huh? Because things are going to happen. Thunderbolts are going to happen to us. Right? It's just life. We live in a world of impermanence, and life is problematic. Things are going to happen. I learned a long time ago, it's not how well I can throw a punch, it's how well I take a punch. And when thunderbolts happen, how am I going to respond to that? What is my response to a thunderbolt? I'll let you in a little thing. Well, it's not so little. Many of you guys may know about it. I have a real-life stalker. I mean, this real, right out of Hollywood. I have no idea who this person is. Never met them in my life. But according to this person, they're wishing me death. They're sending me death threats and all kinds of strange things. And, you know, like 500 emails over 2 days and things like that. And so I got some legal folks taking care of it. And I'm doing what I do is praying for their well-being. But it's dropped in my lap out of nowhere. And I don't know the person. So what do you do when these things happen? Lock and load and go look for them? Let them ruin my day? Get agitated and doubtful? Or just chop wood and carry water? And let the folks who are supposed to take care of that take care of it. And I go to a meeting and go help a drunk. Things are going to happen. And we're going to get great joys in this path too. Great things are going to happen out of nowhere. The money will come. The job will come. The relationship will come. Sometimes the relationship will leave. And it's a great thing too. But things are going to happen. And how do we operate? How do we navigate through that? If my center is aligned with God, I'm experiencing oneness and no duality, I will navigate fine. And sometimes that system will take me up and down and in and out, and I'll have to climb a mountain sometimes. I watched this weekend, at the risk of embarrassing her, I watched this weekend the work, all the work done in step 11 and the action we're supposed to take in step 12 and the scratching and the clawing and uphills and downhills and down alleyways and out the other way with Marion and doing some closure and healing. I just watched the whole thing take place. She bear witness for me as to what 11 and 12 is supposed to look like without saying a word about it. Because we get to this place of spiritual fitness, and then what do we do with it? Well, we're supposed to talk about it here. We're supposed to give it away to another drunk, but then we take it into our 12th step. And part of practicing these principles is that spiritual fitness. When the thunderbolts come, how do I handle it? When the joys come, how do I handle it? How do I just be when there's a tornado around me? Have my ego gotten too large that I can't talk to you about things that I'm afraid of now? Can I was at the Lady of Lords last week, and you and I were just talking like two drunks. No podium, no nothing. Can I do that? And just kind of let my hair down and say, you know, I've got concerns about some things. Because I'm not able to do that. I'm in worse trouble than I think. When I'm spiritually fit, I can talk to you about what's going on with me. And it's okay. Because in the world of God, there is no gravity. I'm not going to fall. And another drunk will hold his arms out and catch me. This is the great thing we get to do. Now, if I'm operating on a level of consciousness driven by me, well, I'm fear-based, insecure all the time. My ego's running the show. I got to be careful who I talk to. I can't look bad. I can't look too good. I'm constantly on this tightrope trying to balance life. And I'm in a lot of trouble. And I'm going to seek relief elsewhere. And the relief elsewhere is sometimes a sex spree or a food spree or a money spree or a thinking spree or just a spree. Because coming into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm on. Right? Anyone identify with that? I'm in AA. I'm spiritual now. Right? Until I get on 95 going south and I really don't care anymore, right? If I have to walk into AA and feel like I'm on, I have an internal problem. I have a disconnection with God. If any place I should feel most home is when I walk into an AA meeting and meet a drunk outside and just shoot the breeze about what's going on. It doesn't have to be spiritual. It could just be, how's work? How's the family? How are you doing? Right? Being aligned with God, I have found, I've been on both sides of the coin. being aligned with God, I have found a tremendous amount of freedom, the way God allows me to be free. Some people say I'm really reserved. That's how God has made me. But I'm freer than I've ever been in my life. And this journey the last time through the work has taken me back to my religious organization and attending my masses on a Sunday and worshiping the carpenter and all that comes with that and being still open to other religions. And it's blown open doors for me. I've never felt freer on the inside, even while a stalker is stalking me. I don't care. I walk with my God, and I know you do too, whether you know it or not. That's the great thing we get to experience when we're going through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's no longer just giving lip service to God, which we do at the beginning. We want to be a part of. I did it. I hear the old timers talk about how sure they were about God, and I raised my hand and sound real sure about God till I left the meeting. I wasn't so sure. And we parrot that stuff, trying to be a part of. Bill called it the herd instinct. We want to be in that. And then we get to a place where we have an experientially, I can talk to you about this power called God. And many of you can too. We're sure about that. And there's a thirst, there's a yearning to know more of this God. And we do what we do privately in our own time, chopping wood and carrying water to experience God. Not so we can sound profound at a meeting. We're not in charge of that. But just to experience the abundance, and that's a great word in AA, the abundance of God. So I walk closer, I walk tighter with God, but I'm looser in my life, which means when I work with a drunk, I got more to offer. And a lot of times when I'm doing my stuff, it's like, how can I be of greater service to others? I got to be able to give more. And then sometimes we're asked to give a talk, and the Spirit will push what the Spirit's got to push. And if anyone knows what I'm talking about, you've been in that place where you have no idea what you're going to say, the Spirit pushes. Sometimes people say, you talk really fast. I'm not in charge of that, man. Listen slower. I mean, you know. And when we get to do these things, we get to treat them as sacred. I remember a long time ago, I was living in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, and I was at it used to be a 4:30 and a 6 o'clock meeting, and the 4:30 was a step meeting, and the guy got there and says, they just called me to speak on step 5. I had to run home, go through my 12 and 12, study step 5, and as a newbie, I said, what's wrong with that picture? What do you mean you had to go home and study step 5? Don't do the talk then. We ought to be in a place where I say, can you speak on tradition 3, step 11, world of the spirit? Okay, let's go. It's where I live. And that's that being organized and prepared to be of service to another drunk. Sometimes it's one-to-one, sometimes it's a few hundred. I would hear new people talk about God when I first came in, and I wanted what they had to offer. Desperately, by the way. Desperately, because I was very attracted to men who were spiritual. Very attracted to men who walk softly and carry a big book. I was not attracted to show-offs in AA. I was not attracted to the people ostentatious. I didn't like that. It reminded me of Brooklyn. I wanted no part of that. I wanted people who walk softly and carry a big book. Spiritual men in AA. And I loved the way they dressed. And I wanted what they had to offer. And they would talk about how sure they were of God. And sequel, I knew I wasn't there yet. How can I get to experience God? And they told me it's 1 through 9 into 10, 11, and 12. And it's interesting about this path, what I have found. At the beginning, it's a group of drunks for good orderly direction. And I'm doing what you do because it's working for you, and I'm so desperate, I'll follow your directions. I walk into a meeting, and I felt safety in the numbers, unity in the power of the sacred fellowship. But I still had to go home. And you guys talked of a very personal God that you were absolutely sure about, experiencing oneness and not two-ness with. How do I get there? And they moved me through 1 through 9. But God was vague. It was out there somewhere. It wasn't tangible for me. Nor was the path. The path was a path I never walked before, going to a destination I never went to before, with 12 steps that I never tried before. And I was just reading something recently that sums this whole thing up. St. John of the Cross says, the only way we can see the path is with the light that burns in our heart. which is what we get, that desire to go to any lengths, that willingness to go to any lengths. I can throw everything I got at you. If it's not there, you're not listening. You're going to do what you want anyway. But when you get the drunk, whether it's Park Avenue, park bench, and there's a hunger for this, all I have to do is say, walk this way, and they're following me. And even if I'm not around, they will experience God because of the hunger inside, and the light in their heart will show them the path. Many times, I'm sure most of us have had times where it looked dark, it didn't look good, whether it was health, financial relationships, or just life. Where do I go from here? What's around the corner? What's going to get me this time? But there's an undercurrent of ease and comfort. There's an undercurrent of God that says, just walk softly, I got you. And I found there's no gravity in God's world. There's a lot of gravity in my mind. There's a lot of skepticism and doubt in my mind. In God's world, there's none. And when we experience oneness in that, whether it's a brief moment or it gets into more moments, and maybe an hour, perhaps a day, like some of these monks live, there is no gravity. It's ease and comfort. And it all comes from this power called God. So why are we hanging around in AA and not looking? Let me get some God. It certainly works. I know if you had some dry goods on our table and you look nice, I'm diving in. Right? What do we got? Remember, what are we drinking? I never tried that. Give me a vat of it. I'll see where it takes me. Right? And then we got God, which is the solution, which is my breath, my life, vital for me. And then I decide and debate and wait, and I do 90 meetings in 90 days and wait for the miracle. You ever heard of this one? Wait for the miracle. Don't leave till the miracle happens. Like there's a door, like Monty Hall, door number one, door number two, door number... I'm sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The miracle's happened. Because if you're a real alky, whether you're in treatment, sober living, or you're here on your own, if you're a real addict or an alky, you know we're not supposed to be sitting in a meeting of AA. I don't care it's Monday night. It doesn't make a difference. We're supposed to be drunk or dead. So how's that happen? So I need to, and then I get to a place where I get to experience God. Right in Alcoholics Anonymous, which was the bridge back to my religious community. How cool is that? And God knew exactly when the ground was fertile enough and then placed a new sponsor in my path who has a crisscross of the same lineage of my last sponsor, who were very religious men. Very big, big book monsters. But they understood my path and then started to plant some seeds and plant some, mustard seed, we move them out and plant some seeds. And through a series of considerations, I wind up back in my church, and my 11th step is taken on a new dimension. Our book is talking about growing and understanding and effectiveness. What are we doing as individuals to grow in understanding and effectiveness with this power called God? Because if I haven't thought about a drink in a while, that's great. And if I had a drink in a long time, that's great. But do I think drinking is out of the equation now? Oh, I'll never drink again, says who? Because the same way I go forwards through the steps, my illness wants to take me backwards through the steps. And at the end of the day, there's a Mr. Boston or a Jack Daniels waiting somewhere in some bar with my name on it. And I'm aware of that one. Because we're not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition. The maintenance of this soul. The great thing about step 11 is we can just talk about this. We can have 12 weeks on just step 11 because we all come at God in different ways. Our book gives us an outline, but we all have our personal gods. Even if it's the same God that we're praying to, you have a little different spin on it than I do. And what we do to grow in understanding and effectiveness, and we all have, if we've been in this work, God experiences. Even newbies have God experiences. And for them, it might be, please give me a parking space, and there's a parking space. I had a spiritual awakening. God gave me space. That's okay. If that hooks you into God, that's okay. I've had folks come to me many times and talk about their spiritual experiences. I put that in quotes. Now, as an outsider, I'd say, well, sounds like more of a coincidence, but who am I to doubt your spiritual experience? And if that brings you from the shore of reason to a place of faith, then go for it. If finding a parking space, you feel God's work in your life, then great. And if you have to meditate on a mountain for 7 days in sacred silence, and that makes you experience God, then great. As long as we're looking at a God that's all love and no opposite, huh? with no conditions on this God, which is one of the things I had to navigate through in my own personal religion with the conditions. If I didn't do this, I was going to land there, way down there. And if I really walked this path, I might have a shot to go up there. And I spoke to some folks about this, and they explained to me what they meant by that. Very simply, if I'm walking a spiritual path, I don't have to worry about going anywhere until God calls me home and there's a room in his mansion for me. And that's who I get to eat with. That's who I get to break bread with. That's who I get to meet others with, family members who have passed on. It's a great place. That has brought me to away from this 11th step, has taken me away from one of my greatest fears that I grew up with, and that was dying. Now, trust me, guys, I'm not signing up to go. I'm not in a hurry. But one of my greatest fears was, oh my God, one day I'm going to die. That's going to happen. One day God's going to say, okay, time to come home. But where I've been standing for the last few years, I'm not in a hurry to go, but I'm not afraid of going either. Because I got a decent idea of who's waiting for me and what that's going to look like. I've gotten free of one of the biggest hooks in my heart for the longest time. One of the biggest fears that would just take my legs out from under me. Things were going good and death would come in. This was a big one for me. Death would scream in my ear, what am I even trying for? And it's probably going to be ugly. I mean, it was awful. I don't care. One of the first disciplines that seem to go by the board, by the wayside, in step 11, if we have a step 11, is nightly review and then the meditation. And I know this because I've gotten a few times lazy. I didn't feel like writing a mantra. I didn't feel like hitting a meditation mat at 11 o'clock at night, checking into a hotel, you know, on no sleep, having to hit the podium that night, get back to your room, you're tired, you're exhausted, and I got to meditate now. I just spoke. Isn't that good enough, God? You know what it is. But what do I want to do to grow? What do I want to do to be disciplined? How disciplined am I? Or am I just giving God lip service? I have a responsibility when I'm working a drunk. When I tell a drunk I do nightly review, they know I do nightly review because I'll show you my nightly review. And when I talk about meditation, they know I'm talking about meditation because I will show you how I meditate. My life should reflect a life of meditation. On and on and on. I don't have to pretend. I don't have to mask. I don't have to remember stuff. And so I hit a mat and I meditate 11 o'clock at night. Right. I'm on about 4 hours sleep since yesterday. Landed at 6:30. By the time I got in, I was looked like I had one day back this morning. It was just... Right.
We got white chips.
I mean, it's weird. I've been there before. This was like the worst jet lag I've had in a long time. It was strange. And you're kind of floating around, you know. Oh, yeah, I do live here, I think. I'm not sure. And you're trying to sleep, but you can't because your body's like, got to go do things. It was awful. And I got about an hour nap, 45-minute nap. And it was one of those things where you just fall out. And I got up, and I got to pray and meditate now. Do I really have to? God, I was a good boy for 4 days. I mean, do I really need to do this? Right? But I did. You know what? It wasn't much work. What a small price tag for a life of freedom. A couple of times a day, worship my God. Give attention to this power in meditation. Don't petition. Give thanks in my prayer for another day above ground, sucking air and not drinking. What a great way to live. I mean, my friend here, I mean, he's just telling me how all these, you know, working out and kicking butt, still a member of AA. I see him at a million meetings a week. I mean, that's how I want to be. You know, body, mind, and spirit, taking care of myself, being a part of this deal, always having a smile on my face and not being a grumpy old timer. That's how I want to be. And God allows me to do that. The interesting thing about this path, it's already laid out for us. The joyous, happy, and free path is laid out for every one of us. A loving God would never deny us that. Who denies us that is us. Because of this predator called the mind, says, who am I kidding? I'll never get God. I'll never experience God. I'll never get sober. I'll never get recovered like those folks. I'll never be able to give a talk. That's all coming from a mind. And God says, I put a path of you, you know, laid out with rubies and emeralds for you. Walk. I prepared a banquet for you. And the mind says, no, I can't do that. It's called contempt, pride, and investigation. And nowhere in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous does it say there's a qualification to experience this. It just says self must die. We must be rid of self. And how do we do that? 1 through 9. I can be a carpenter, a plumber, an engineer, a doctor, anything, and do this work and experience God, because God's not hidden. And some folks will keep God hidden in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some folks will keep God hidden in our religious communities. AA says, no, God's right here. The path isn't difficult. It's open, roomy, broad, inclusive, never exclusive. Back in chapter 4, they told us that. If there were requirements on finding God, like some of these private clubs we belong to, right? Some of us do. We live in Florida. There's probably some in Boca. I know there's a private club somewhere. Right? Or some of these organizations, wrong color, wrong money, wrong job, it goes on and on. Book doesn't say that. God doesn't say that. We say that. We inflict that kind of self-will on others. It doesn't do that in the book. Even religions segregate. Watch CNN News. That's where that takes us. It's never about forgiveness, it's about retaliation. In the big book, it's about forgiveness and love. But I can't experience that even if I wanted to, unless I get me out of the way. And 1 through 9, again, we'll do that. I will access power in 1 through 9 that will rocket me into 10 and 11. I will no longer look like the same person who started out in step 1. I will physically look different. Emotionally and spiritually, I'm completely changed. And I get rocketed into 10 and 11, and that power, working with others in 12, that power will take me through 1 through 9 again. I love the effect produced by God. I want more, because I love the effect produced by booze. Give me more. When did enough become enough for any drunk? I've had enough, God. I'm driving tonight. Thank you very much. Right? I was a glutton out there. I was a pig. I was. That same hunger for something has shown up in Alcoholics Anonymous since I got here. But the something isn't anything. It's the God thing. And I remember growing up, always as a kid, always striving, always striving. And as this one author says, always striving and never arriving. Scratch and claw, not good enough, have to get there. Get there, have to get there. That stopped once we experienced God, because wherever we are is right where I'm supposed to be. It's okay. It's all okay. My legs are grounded. My legs are under me, and I walk with this powerful God. And the other piece is I need to recognize that so do you, regardless of how twisted up you are, how new you are, how many times you've relapsed, is that you have just as much God in you as I do now, and that's the common denominator. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we have the alcoholism as the common denominator. I need to go past the conceptualizing of other people and the generalizing of other people and just say, here's a child of God walking here, can't get this. Not to say, oh no, here they are again, this other loser. They're dying of a terminal illness back again. Am I building a bridge? I watch Marion build bridges all weekend long. Am I building a bridge? I'll carry you over the bridge even. You can walk over, but I'm building a bridge. Be a builder of bridges. It's a great way to live. You can walk over if you want. If you want, I will carry you over. But I'm not walking away until I build this bridge. And then I can walk away. All love, no opposite. Anyone can walk over. Even my enemies. I've had an experience. There was this gentleman in another state. He openly, you know, assassinated my character about me and my big book. And it went on and on and on. And as God would work out, I'm at a conference speaking, and he was there. And I was here, and he was there. And he was avoiding me. And I said, this is not how this is supposed to be. I know he's thrown me under the bus. I know it. For years, he's thrown me under the bus, and we're in the same room. Okay, where do I stand on this now? I'm not going to roll over and let you step on my throat. But where do I stand in this? I went over to him, and I extended my hand. I asked him, how are you? How's it going? He got all beat red in the face, and he said, I'm doing okay. We had some small talk the next morning at the conference, exchanged some pleasantries, and it's done. I built the bridge. So if I see him in a meeting tonight, I have to go, uh-oh, there's that guy who threw me under the bridge, and I get him later on, and I'm getting him after him, you know. I have to do that. It's called living free. So how come our 11th step, we don't do it in a lot of meetings? How come a lot of AAs, folks, I meet a lot of AAs in my travels, and when they call me up and tell me they're struggling, I ask them, where are you with amends? Do they have outstanding amends they haven't made that they could be making without causing harm? Do you have a sponsor? They usually go, that means no. Right? And then I ask them, what are you doing with the 11th step? And they says, well, I pray. I says, good. How often? I'm in the morning. How about at night? Well, I'm a little slack on that. Means no. Right. How about meditation? I don't meditate. How about nightly review? Do you answer the questions on page 86 at night? A lot of us have the 10 and 11 confused. We think 10 is at night. 10 is what I'm doing around during the day. I'm walking around during the day. How am I doing? Gut check. How am I doing? Turn, watch, aware, observe. Ask ourselves some questions. I like to write them out. 11 is when I'm done at night. The review, the reflection on where I missed the mark today. We all miss the mark from time to time. Sometimes less, sometimes more. Sometimes not even an action I took. It's just some of my thinking has gone a little sideways today. A little lust going on, a little greed going on, a little anger going on, a little character assassin. How am I doing? I missed the mark. And if I don't nail that, if I don't fix that and surrender that to God, it will start to manifest like a snowball going down a mountain. Starts off this big, it gets as big as this podium by the time it's over. I don't need to be hit like that. So I take a look at what we do, at what I did during the day, and my 11th step is key. And sometimes when we're writing nightly review, it seems like just very like mundane, stupid questions. What does it all mean? It means a lot. When anyone ever do a crossword puzzle when you're a kid, or maybe you do them now as a hobby, you got a jigsaw puzzle, I'm sorry, and you got like 1,000 pieces, and some of the pieces, maybe the size of your thumbnail, it's like insignificant, and you just put it aside, and you put the whole thing together, and that little piece is missing, and you start ripping apart the house because the puzzle's not complete, because I need one little piece the size of my thumbnail. Oh, that was important. I can't afford to have a hole in my soul or a missing piece here. My life depends upon my consistency, my accountability, and my responsibility to God and to you, to my sponsor, to my job, in my relationship. Consistency, accountability, responsibility. Now, I can try to do that. I can inflict self-will on that, and I'll pull it off pretty good for a few weeks, and then I'll get lazy, and I won't. But God allows me to do that. So I do nightly review. It takes me 5 minutes. If I've been a bad boy, it takes me 10 minutes. If I was off the beam, I got more to write. And because I was in Seattle and Bellingham, Washington this week, really far from my home turf, it doesn't mean I have a few days off. I sat in a hotel room and wrote inventory because that's what I do. And then I share it. And at night I do meditation. Interesting thing about meditation, do we know what posture and breath means? How do I meditate? What do I expect out of meditation? Am I looking for the brass ring, 5 minutes of meditation, I'll be Moses and part some sea as soon as I'm done? It's all priming the pump. It's all a chop of wood and carry wood. It's all getting the ground fertile. God will do the growing. Doctor does the surgery. God does the healing. It's about getting the ground right. And when the ground is right, the growing will happen and things will come to fruition. Questions will be answered. I get my GPS back. I navigate through life completely differently than when I'm not praying and meditating and getting me out of the way. And then I can experience God. Then I can experience oneness with God. And then I'm not apologizing for God. I can shout it from the rooftops in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And on awakening, I go through my day. I think about my day. Who's running my day today? And sometimes I'll sit with someone and say, listen, I'm confused about this. Can you help me? I'm really not sure what to do. Our book tells us to do that. Always turning back to God. Maybe I can call James and say, hey, James, I got a fear of resentment. What do I do with this? I'm not sure what to do. Our book tells us to do that. our greatest enlightened people sought something other than themselves for guidance at times. Are you telling me I can't? Have I gotten too big for that? I consider my plans for the day, my book tells me. You know, what does this day look like? Where do I have to be? My to-do list, we all have one. Taking kids to school, making dinner, going to work, whatever it might be. We all have a to-do list. And that to-do list is attached to a calendar and a clock on the wall. But has the calendar and the clock on the wall become my God? Like at 6 o'clock, I have to eat. Right? Because that's how I was brought up. 6 o'clock, I didn't have time to eat, but I'm not hungry. But 6 o'clock, you have to eat. Who's my God? A clock on a wall. I'm not hungry. I'll eat 11 o'clock tonight. Interesting, I remember being down the Jersey Shore one time. I think I shared this with you. It was like maybe 10 o'clock in the morning, and the folks got up and says, oh my God, look at the time. We wanted to go for an early breakfast and go to the beach. The whole day's ruined. This is like 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning. Are you kidding me? Right? They weren't in AA, that's for sure. So the next morning, I got that clock, and I hit it. And I get up like most of us. I'm up 5, 6 in the morning. I'm going about my business, and they got up the usual. And look, oh, the clock's gone. Hey, you guys hungry? You want to go for, let's all go for breakfast. It's the same exact time. So we can get attached to things telling us what to do. I consider my plans for the day. I ask God to direct my thinking. Asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. Keep me out of the way today. I often joke when I do these, I hope I don't show up. Just keep me out of here. Let the Spirit show up in all we do. Because when we show up, when self shows up, that means the mind is present as well. And I have no idea what the mind is capable of doing, what he's going to tell me to do, or how to act, or what not to say. And it's just walking on a minefield. Get him out of the way. Best way to do that is 1 through 9. So I just want to read a couple of things out of our book here. Back in step 10 on page 85, it says, it's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels, my accomplishments. I'm headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. There's a clear-cut warning. So I do something really good at work today. That means tomorrow I can call in sick. I go here a fifth step. I can take a week off from AA. It's about getting right back in there, getting right on the horse and keep riding. That anything good that I do is the credit goes to God. I take no credit for anything good. In fact, when I think about that, it's pretty scary. If I start taking credit for good things, that means I'm in charge again, and I know what happens to me. I drive into walls. I'm not cured of alcoholism. What I have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Not stay the same, but nurture the spirit. Get the soul food. 2 hours picking out the clothes, make sure the hair's right, shoes got to match, tie's got to right, make sure the pant right, hanky's in there, everything's got to look good, right? Everything good, car's clean, got the right cologne on. I spent 3 seconds with God. What did I do to get my soul food today? Went down to the beach, made sure I got a good tan, went to the gym, worked out, got the right clothes, do it all over again, twice a day, 3 times a day. Got to look good. And I'm starving to death. I'm spiritually starving to death, which means I got to get more expensive clothes to impress people I don't like and spend money I don't have. And I got to get a bigger car, a shinier car. It goes on and on and on because I'm starving to death spiritually. I'm malnutrition and I'm dying. And the knee-jerk reaction is to get more. So it fills up this hole in the soul. It's never filled. And a little bit of God, and I'm good. And suddenly, who cares what jacket? The car's fine. Everything's good. I'm not going to die and go to jail over this. I'm not certainly not drinking. It's all okay. It's really all okay. And then when we get dressed, it's for the pleasure of dressing. When I wash my car, it's for the pleasure of washing it. When I clean my house, it's for the pleasure of doing it. Get it? There's a big difference. There's no attachments. There's no obligations. My boss always says, options, not obligations. Every day is a day. I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. Every day is a day. Every day is a day. Every day is a day. I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities, not just when I'm in an AA meeting and everyone's watching me. All my activities. So when a new girl walks in the room and she looks real pretty, I don't sponsor her, men. Bring her over to some of the women and leave her alone. It's practicing these principles in all our affairs. I've been seeing a lot of that lately. I don't know what's going on. It must be something in the air. But I've been seeing a lot of guys crossing boundaries. And I'll just get on the soapbox. If it was your sister, do you want you showing up to your sister? Someone like you? No. You bring her over to one of the women in the meeting and leave her alone. Okay, saw a lot of it in the last 2 weeks around some of our meetings, and I was pretty much nauseated by it. Okay, and guys, our old timers, let's collar those new guys who think this is a dating service and pull them back in and show them respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. Okay? Every day is a day I must carry the vision of God's will to all my activities. How can I serve thee? Your will, God, not mine, be done. It says, these are thoughts which must go with me constantly, and I can exercise my willpower along this line. It's the proper use of the will. It's a great thing, proper use of the will. There's a difference between proper use of the will and me managing my life. Me managing my life is I'm in charge again. Things got to look my way, go my way. I have to say certain things. You have to perform for me right on cue. And I'm constantly in fear, which means I have current agnosticism, which means my life is unmanageable because I'm in self-reliance. It's a vicious cycle. Proper use of the will is God gives me a task to do, and everything he's given me, I throw at it. Teach children in kindergarten. You're gifted to do that. Go do it. You're a good service person in AA. You just have a knack for it. No one had to show you just how to do it. Go do it. Right? I sponsor a guy who's great at starting running conventions, conferences. He started two in Jersey from the ground up. They're home runs. He's just got a thing for that. I couldn't even fathom doing that. I told him, Jim, just go do it. Proper use of the will. When we're hearing a fifth step, and we're sitting with someone heart to heart, proper use of the will. Throw everything you can at that newcomer to pull them out. Proper use of the will. Managing my own life, I'm always uneasy. Proper use of the will, I'm sure. It's right. I sleep at night. Same thing with God's will and my will. How do we know the difference between my will and God's will? A lot of times we know what God's will is not, first of all. Right? My will, there's always some uncomfortability involved. No, I shouldn't be doing this. If I get caught, I've got to cover my track. There's just something not right. God's will, there's no thought involved. In the spiritual dimension, there's no thought. Thinking without, action without thinking. Consciousness without thought. I don't need to think. It's that intuitiveness that pushes you. Did you ever work with a drunk and some pearl of wisdom flows out and you look behind you and say, who said that? That was pretty good, right? That wasn't planned. That's just all the chopping wood and carrying water. Okay, here it is. Go for it. And when that channel's open, things happen. Great things happen. Right? So step 10 preps us. The end of the writing in step 10. It proper use of the will. And then it slides right into step 11. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him, capital H, who has all knowledge and power. Talking about God. When I got here, I had no direction. I had no strength. And I didn't even know what inspiration was. In fact, that stuff, if I did get it, was based on external conditions. When I got a bump in pay, I felt inspired until I spent it. Right. When I was with the guys on the corner, I had direction. And it was whatever they did, I did. That's how I operated. But here it's coming from a very deep inner place. The God place is my path clear. I can only hear if I'm clear. If I'm loaded with me, what I'm doing is praying to me. I'm not hearing God. How can I experience God if I am God? Well, God told me this, and I tell people, well, my God told me something completely different. Now what do we do? Right? If I'm not clear, I can't hear. And if I'm really in the spiritual place, I don't have a problem sitting with someone saying, hey, I got this thing going on. What do you think about this? Let me seek some counsel on it. It's the great thing we do in AA. One of my joys is getting out from behind this podium and going to a meeting and having a cup of coffee and sitting in the back and talking to a couple of drunks. Just being a drunk in an AA meeting. It's the coolest thing. I mean, I love doing this. The most comfortable in the whole world I am is doing this. I don't think. I'm as still and much ease and comfort as I can experience just about anywhere doing this. But there's another piece of me that's to sit down in the back of a meeting with a couple of drunks and say, what's going on? Did you watch the game? What's happening over the week? How are you guys doing? And just be a spoke in a wheel. That's freedom. Now, if I'm loaded with me, I can't do that because I'm constantly jockeying for position. I'm sparring with guys. You know that verbal sparring? You're trying to outdo each other on spirituality, outdo each other on war. So there's a constant sparring. You get in the car and go, oh, what a long night that was. I've been boxing for 3 hours. Or I can go with a sense of ease and comfort. Just a couple of more things. If I've carefully followed directions, this is how they lead into step 11. It's a consideration. If I have carefully followed directions, well, that's the question. Have I? Have I carefully followed directions in this book? If I have, I'm going to get the benefits of what they've been talking about. If I haven't, I won't. And if I've approached this with a great sense of urgency, my life depends upon me being spiritually fit. The information to get spiritually fit is in the big book. I'm going to find a sponsor who went through the book and do what they tell me to do and not steer the car. What AA is asking us to do to create a picture is drive down 95 at around 80 miles an hour, and the teacher says, now take your hands off the wheel and close your eyes. What? That's exactly what we're looking to do. We're going to be doing this, one eye open, look under the blindfold, putting our hand on the wheel once in a while, until we realize our track record, every time I got behind the wheel, I hit a tree. So maybe I can try something different, and then I'm just coasting. I'm just coasting down 95, free and easy, because God's got the wheel. And it takes me a little while to get used to when we're walking on God's plane, like, uh-oh, I know something's going to happen. And then after a while, God's got it. I'm a passenger, man. Well, I wanted to go there, and God says, no, we're going there, and I get there, everything's cool. Proper use of the wheel, or manage my life. To some extent, I've become God conscious. I've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. We must go further, and that means more action. Begun to develop this vital sixth sense. This came to me a few years ago in meditation. A book says we've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. We all know we're born with five. Science has proved that. Science has a problem proving God. They're kind of getting on our side, but they can't really get clear on this power. It's a lot of information, but they really can't document 1 and 1 equals 2. There's a miracle. Next one. So there's vital sixth sense. It says we developed it. It's not intuitive. That God's, that spirit that we all have in us, in my brokenness, I still have this power called God. That makes no sense to a thinking mind. My track record was awful. I still have a spirit called God. That's the sixth sense. Is it possible, and I just put this out there, that we were actually born with this, but they just couldn't, like, figure it out? That only gurus have a sixth sense? Or is it the God sense, the God spirit, that you can't put under an x-ray or an MRI? You can't dissect that. God won't allow that, but it's there. I flip the switch off, the lights go off. I flip the switch on, the lights go on. There's a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes that happens. I don't care. Lights on, lights off. Next. Spirit of God. It's there. And we tap into it in Alcoholics Anonymous when we have this vital spiritual experience. When we were skeptical, full of skepticism and doubt, we get to the other side and that's been removed. We're sure. And no one can tell us anything different. Because a new person walking to a room right now with 20 minutes sober, or one day sober, or a couple of weeks sober, where God is kind of out there, that same drunk in about 30 days or 60 days or 90 days going through this work will be sure about God. That's the age of miracles. The miracles happened. And then I get to go into sacred silence and meditation and give attention to God and just be still, like a student waiting for the teacher, like a child waiting for his dad. Just be still. And stand there in front of my God, raw. with all the cracks, with all the stuff behind me, stand at the altar, kneel at the altar, meditate at the altar in stillness, and just work with breath, posture and breath, and wait. And then I get up off the mat, and I go about my day. And days, some days are strenuous, and some days are exhausting, and some days, you know, I want to go back to bed, I don't feel like going to work, but somehow God gives me a place of stillness, how to operate from, and to chop wood and carry water. I will tell you, I do my nightly reviews, good or bad, indifferent, I don't have a truckload of amends to make. I'm not going around going, oh my God, I did this, oh my God, I said that, oh my God, I stole from her, oh my God, I stole from him. My first inventory was, oh my God, I got to make amends because I hurt everyone I walked into. The age of miracles is still with us. It says our own recovery proves that. That's all I got. Peace.